Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Hello, it's Norman Swan here with this week's Health Report. In this program, a special feature on a group of children, possibly quite a large group, called Gap Kids. It's not about a children's clothes store, it's about children who fall between the yawning cracks in the system because of how their brains deal with language. Imagine not being able to speak your native language, although you hear it perfectly, and sometimes understand everything. It takes you a long time to think of words to reply, and then it's very hard to put them in the right order or say them properly. That's maybe 7% of the world's population, according to new data from the UK and the US. These are children with a profound speech impairment, and they fall between the gaps in Australia between federal and state governments and state education departments. But these children, with the right help, could function well. Yet without help, international research indicates they'll be a burden, and Australia looks as though it's lagging decades behind with this unique group of children. Our reporter is Heather Stewart.
At night, my dream. At night, dreaming in my book. My birthday, the winter. Dumbdun. And dream months.
And how old are you going to be?
I don't want to be this now.
How old are you now?
I'm 5.
You're listening to a 6-year-old boy who lives in Brisbane chatting about his upcoming birthday. His parents don't want him identified, and for the purpose of this program, we'll refer to him as Sam. Sam has a primary language disorder. It means he struggles to create speech and interpret what is being said to him. 3 years ago, he couldn't talk at all, but he's had intensive speech, occupational and physiotherapy since he was 2.5. Now he can hold a conversation.
Hello, it's Dr. McDowell here.
Brisbane-based paediatrician Dr. Michael McDowell describes Sam's condition as a developmental language disorder.
Okay, well, it sounds like I probably...
It's not a disorder of muscle control, such as cerebral palsy. Secondly, it's not a disorder of thinking, so it's possible to have primary language disorder and to be very clever, even though you have trouble communicating. Thirdly, it's not a disorder of getting on with people, so specifically, it's not an autistic disorder, it's purely a disorder of speaking and communication.
So how does it present?
It presents developmentally, which means that obviously a newborn child can't communicate, so you don't know whether they've got a problem with communication. But as they grow up and as you expect them to be able to talk, then usually they don't talk at the level expected for their age. So, for example, if a child's 2 years old, they might still only be babbling and making sounds but no discernible words. If a child's 3 years old, they might only have 2 or 3 words and have trouble using them and still a lot of babble and so on. So they're presenting language is well behind what you expect.
In Western Australia, Associate Professor Kate Taylor is with the Centre for Developmental Health, heading a decade-long study into specific language disorders. It's a joint initiative between Curtin University of Technology and the Telethon Institute for Child Health Research,
and is co-funded by the National Institutes of Health in the US. Kate Taylor's study indicates children with specific language disorders require daily early intervention in the form of speech therapy, occupational therapy, physiotherapy and psychology if they're ever to have a chance of a normal life. Services which are provided in the United Kingdom and America, but not in Australia. More on that later in the program. Kate Taylor says a child with a specific language disorder often falls below the radar.
These children are hard to pick and really look like any other child, except they have an unexplained difficulty in language acquisition. So we're trying to find out why, I guess, the candidate risks come from the child's own neurobiology, the child's genes and the child's language learning environment. And at this point, the evidence is strongest for genetic risks for specific language impairment.
Kate Taylor says specific language disorders are a condition for life.
There's been a common belief that children with early language delay will grow out of their difficulties. We know that this isn't the case and that children who start off late to talk continue to have difficulties with language development over time, right through adolescence and adulthood.
There's a number of terms you might hear for a speech and language disorder. Dr. McDowell explains.
I would agree that the terminology is really part of the problem in understanding this disorder. For example, if a parent looked up on the internet about primary language disorder, they might see words like dyspraxia and apraxia, which refer to the control of speech sounds. They might see primary language disorder, generalized language disorder, semantic pragmatic disorder, aphasia, dysphasia. The list goes on. In the professional literature, all of these terms have quite specific meanings. But in the lay literature, the kind of things parents would see when they look it up on the internet, all of these terms intermingle and can be extremely confusing.
Dr. McDowell says there's no cure, but good therapy can make a difference.
Do you want me to get you a drink, Nathan?
No, thanks.
No?
16-year-old Nathan Cole, talking here to his mother Diane, is proof of this.
Okay, and what about, do you want a muffin, something to eat?
Later.
Nathan is a handsome teenager, a tall boy with almost the physique of a man. He has a big smile and engaging and kind eyes, but his demeanour shrinks as soon as you attempt to engage in a conversation with him. Nathan has a primary language disorder and every day struggles to communicate.
So, Nathan, what do you want to say to people about you?
I'm me and you are you. That's it. Yeah. Anything else?
Nathan's mother, Diane Cole, translates his comments not because he's being a surly teenager or because she's being presumptuous. It's what she does instinctively to ensure his message is getting through.
You're basically saying you are you and other people are the way they are, so you want people to accept everybody that may be different in their own way.
Yes.
Nathan Cole has been victimised by his peers and is generally misunderstood because of his size and inability to communicate efficiently. His mother, Diane, has tears in her eyes but a steely determination as she tells the story.
As Nathan got older, the social gap with his peers became harder and there was teasing and bullying. Sort of that continued right through till about grade 7 when we had a very serious assault where Nathan was injured and bruised, held down and had a white powder put down his throat. Turned out to be citric acid, which they use in sherbets and things like that. But being on medication, that we didn't know what was going on. So that involved police and everything, and from there I knew I had to do something else. Other private schools, Catholic schools, basically said they didn't have the resources to help me with Nathan.
Nathan Cole wants people to understand it takes him a little while longer to process language and formulate his answers, but tolerance and societal acceptance are some way off.
Now, mister, we're having breakfast. We've got 8 people for breakfast today. Can you help me set the table? 8 of us, please.
Dr. Bev Robotham knows. Her 14-year-old son Daniel also has a language disorder. She's a Brisbane haematologist. Despite a specialist medical background, she admits finding a diagnosis and help for her son has been difficult.
Yep.
Okay. He had this strange disorder that nobody could put a name to and nobody could give you a forward plan on, so you just wallowed. And with that comes tremendous anxiety because you imagine the worst. It's strange. It's not something we can wrap our minds around. If you think about it, language has been around for forever. Goodness knows what the purpose of it was in the first place, but it's been a very long time since the human race had to manage without language, and that's what these children are being asked to do, and or we're asking them to do it, and then we're surprised that they're not much good at it.
Because of the challenges Dr. Robotham faces finding help for her son, she closely monitors federal and state service provisions for children with primary language disorders. She says she is disappointed the Senate investigation into the funding and operation of the Commonwealth, State and Territory Disability Agreement 3 years ago didn't even mention speech disabilities or specific language disorders. Dr. Robotham says this typifies the depth of ignorance about the condition in Australia.
And when I got the transcript, children with language disorders were not mentioned. Nobody was interviewed about them. They just didn't exist within the disability group. And that inquiry has gone nowhere. It was supposed to be followed up by what happens next to children with disability. It's just not on anybody's political horizon.
A world away is Professor Dorothy Bishop, who specialises in neuropsychology at Oxford University. She's been monitoring services for children in Australia with primary language disorders and says they are inadequate and at least 3 decades behind those offered to children in the UK.
It doesn't look very favourable, I have to say. In the UK, I've been working on specific language impairment for now about 30 years. And when I started 30 years ago, we had provision largely in the form of a small number of special residential schools for children with specific language impairment. And then in the 1980s, this extended to having what were then known as language units, which were like special classes attached to mainstream schools. And most large regions would have at least one of these, which catered for maybe 8 to 12 children. And then more recently, there's been a move towards integrating these more closely into the mainstream system. And so it's more common to have them talked of as language resource centres, where children may not be permanently placed, but where they can benefit from specialist help, and there's more of a two-way process of movement between the special resource and mainstream classes. But certainly, when I visited Australia, I've found that it's very patchy across Australia what's available, and there's nothing like this kind of provision widely available. And I was really quite surprised that that was the case.
Principally, in what area did you find there was a great need?
I think that there's a problem for certainly school-aged children who have speech and language problems. I got the impression that, with the exception of one or two states, that there's really very little special for them, and they seem to just be in mainstream provision without much in the way of extra help and without much access or much Medicare cover for speech and language therapy. And then, of course, there's also the problem of what happens with preschool children. And again, I didn't see much evidence that there was certainly much surveillance or attempts to identify such children with the aim of perhaps giving them some early help.
Speech Pathology Australia's president, Corrie Williams, says children in this unique group are known as the gap kids. It's because their care falls between state and federal entities and health and education departments.
They can be called gap kids because there's a gap in services for them, particularly in the school years. There's also, for many of these kids, a gap between their intelligence level and their language level, and that has a significant effect on them throughout life.
Speech Pathology Australia says good language skills are vital for long-term outcomes in education, vocational choices, social-emotional issues and mental health. A New South Wales study published last year surveyed 14,000 primary and secondary students and found 12% had communication disorders, the second highest learning need identified within the study.
Dr. Michael McDowell says paediatricians are electing not to take cases when they present with developmental language delays. The result? Children are missing out on crucial care.
I would hate to be a parent of a child with a language disorder at the moment, because the marketplace is so fragmented that the people who do know what they're doing often have waiting lists up to 2 years or more. So if you've got a child and you're worried about them today, can you imagine having to put your name down and wait for more than a year before that actually gets seen? Then if you get seen and you want an intervention from the public system, the speech pathologist will say, well, we'll see you for 6 weeks, but that's all we can do because we're so booked out. And so the response of the system to your needs just really isn't there, and it's just terrifying for parents, not only for now but looking into the future. So it's quite clear that we've moved from sick kids, so children dying, say, of infectious diseases, through to quality of life paediatrics. So this is a much bigger part of what the average paediatrician has to deal with in the 21st century. So the paediatricians coming out even now could be absolute experts in diseases that they might only see once in their entire lifetime, but know virtually nothing about problems that occur, say, one in every five children. So training is terrible. The third thing is that it's incredibly hard work. So if I see a child with asthma, it's usually fairly straightforward what to do, and it's quick and it feels successful. But to sort out and help a child with a developmental disorder like a language problem, it's hard work. They don't have the support of the resources. And paediatricians now are just voting with their feet. I know of a number in Queensland that have just said, we don't do this anymore, it's too hard, we don't get paid enough, we don't like doing it, we're just not going to see these kids anymore.
How many?
Well, I can think off the top of my head of about three or four in private practice who just aren't doing it anymore. And in real terms, in the public system, so the state government supported paediatricians, the real amount of services hasn't gone up in the last 10 years. The funding structure hasn't been developed to reflect this new kind of work. So in terms of the money we get back from the government, we could see a child for 15 minutes to review their asthma, or see a child for an hour to review complex development and behavioural problems. The money from the government is exactly the same in both cases.
Put it around this way. You gonna put it in? Is it in? Put it in. He's making that noise.
Karen Douglas is a mum in Brisbane who 2 years ago gave up on the Australian system helping her son Max. She knew there was something wrong by the time he was 16 months old because he had other unrelated medical conditions and the primary language disorder was picked up early. But she still had to join the wait list to see paediatricians and speech therapists to get help. When he'd made no progress despite attending 6 months of weekly speech sessions, she became desperate and self-funded a trip to the US. There she found her son's condition, diagnosed as severe apraxia, could be treated.
I know how it feels to be told that your child has the most severe speech disorder there is, and to have a speech therapist say to me quite repeatedly, your child may never talk, I still can't get my head around that at all. Intellectually, there's nothing wrong with Max. Other children in other countries are getting the right help and they are all speaking. So I believe that we can do it here and I can believe we can do it with other children as well.
On her return from the US, Karen Douglas was determined to help her son. She started a charity speech service she named Max's House to help other families in the same plight.
We are so far behind compared to other countries, particularly the United States. And I have to say, you know, in some respects, and I've sort of said this over the last year, I sometimes feel like we live in a third world country when we're not supposed to be that way at all in Australia. We're supposed to be up with things and yet we are years and years behind.
An average Australian speech session can cost between $40 and $60 for half an hour. And it's recommended children with primary language disorders receive at least two a week. It's recognised Australian families pay around $100 a week of their own funds once private cover and Medicare rebates run out if they want their child to have a chance to learn to communicate. In Melbourne, Sheena Riley is a Professor of Paediatric Speech Pathology at the Murdoch Children's Research Institute. Her research centres on early childhood communication disorders and she is still practising as a speech therapist. She says Australia needs to address its deficiencies in service provisions for primary language disorder children, or society will bear the brunt.
Although these are difficult issues to deal with and we don't have all the right answers, we do have to address them because the long-term consequences of not looking after these problems and not intervening early with these children are really dire. These kids have poor outcomes when it comes to school attainment. They have poor outcomes on a range of psychological, social and emotional outcomes. These kids are much more likely to not finish school with any sort of qualification. And if you read any of the new papers coming out about employment options for people with language disorders, it's pretty awful. You know, you're not employable if you've got a speech and language disorder, or it's very difficult to get decent employment. So there are long-term economic consequences to not addressing these problems, and that's without going into the issues around delinquency in our prison population, where people with language disorders are overrepresented. And, you know, there's been beautiful work done in the UK looking at the economic costs involved in having a language disorder. These costs are really quite significant. And if for no other reason than that, we should be addressing them. And we should be addressing them early so that these are not persisting through childhood, adolescence and into adulthood.
An American study concludes it costs between $150 and $180 billion US dollars a year to support people with communication disabilities. It found appropriate early intervention specific to a child's needs could result in a substantial saving to the community. Australia has no comparative study, but Kate Freeman, based in the United Kingdom as a speech pathologist and professional advisor for a communication disorder charity ICANN, says the UK has made similar findings to the US study, resulting in significant policy changes.
It's at three levels, really. One is to an individual child with significant speech and language difficulties, and that's in terms of their life chances and their self-esteem and their ability to get on. The second is to the family, and that's the emotional and financial burden of supporting a child with communication difficulties. And the third is to the nation as a whole, looking at the support that is available to children, and if they don't get the right support early on, what the cost is of the difficulties that arise for them later, and also the adverse effect on the economic well-being of the society. In the United Kingdom, what we've looked at is the cost of supporting individual people who end up what we term NEET, which is not in education, employment and training, between 16 and 18, and that's £97,000 per individual over their lifetime. And the likelihood of people with communication disabilities ending up in that situation is much, much higher than the average.
Kate Freeman says UK studies indicate it's important to find support for children with language disorders before they're aged 5 and a half. Then they are likely to go on to have the same life chances as their peers. But if that help is not forthcoming, there are difficulties for them throughout their life. While the UK is implementing a whole-of-school approach to language disorder detection and language learning, Australia does not even have early detection mechanisms in place, a process that's been established in the US and UK for over a decade. UK staff in early year settings are supported by a specialist team, and this is maintained throughout the child's school life. In Australian schools, students are lucky to receive a diagnosis or even see a speech pathologist. Kate Taylor's Western Australian study has found children with a history of early language delay are at an increased risk for language impairment at 7 years. But not all children who have language delay at 2 years of age will go on to develop specific language impairment. She is recommending preschool screening and toddler screening so help can begin for the children early.
There are certainly well-recognised milestones for language development at 2 years of age. We expect two-year-olds to have a vocabulary of at least 50 words and to start combining words in simple sentences. And this is true for about 80% of children in our study were combining words at 24 months. So this is a good indicator. However, not all the children who have normal language development at two will continue to have normal language development later on. So I think that screening at preschool age is also important. There's certainly an overrepresentation of boys on clinical caseloads, yet in our research there wasn't this strong gender difference at 7 years. So that seems to suggest that girls are at risk for being under-identified unless there is the kind of screening at kindergarten age.
There's one school in the Southern Hemisphere tucked away in the leafy Gumtree Brisbane suburb of Fig Tree Pocket, catering specifically for this unique group of children. Glenleedon's school has room for only 80 students, and families move from across Australia and Southeast Asia so their children can attend. Students learn standard curriculum in small classes with the assistance of a teacher and teacher's aide and a therapy team made up of an OT, physio, speech therapist and psychologist. Vicky Rose Graydon is the principal.
It's sadly lacking in that there aren't options for those parents who do want a special facility to educate their child. They have the options of attending mainstream schools with support from therapists or attending special education units and attending their local school, but there are no options where they can send their child to get intensive therapy and education like we offer here. We have one mum at the moment who feels that her situation is much better now because she travels about 300 kilometres a day to come to the school and go back home again. She travels from Toowoomba to Brisbane every day. But prior to that, she was travelling from Dubbo to Sydney once every 6 months to access therapy.
It's lunchtime. This busy chatter and clunk of chairs in the courtyard masks the fact these students have a primary language disorder. While cautious about outcomes, Vicky Rose Graydon says the whole-of-school approach can improve the lives of these special children.
I believe that we can make a difference in the lives of these children and their families. And ultimately it comes down to not just about improving, you know, the way a child articulates or puts words together, how much they can understand. Ultimately, it's about them believing in themselves and believing that they have a future that is fulfilling and have the same opportunities to the same sorts of things that we take for granted. If we can provide that opportunity for a handful of kids, then it's made it worthwhile. The reality is that there's more than a handful out there.
Speech Pathology Australia is calling for mandated speech pathology services for all children with speech and language disorders, improved access to speech pathology services in rural and remote Australia, and Medicare Allied Health Initiative consultation limits and rebate levels to be extended for speech pathology services. Corey Williams also wants national consistency in services for children who need the help.
It's very frustrating. New South Wales and Western Australia employ very few speech pathologists within their education systems. The other states and territories do have speech pathologists employed within the education systems, but there's a lot of dissatisfaction with the services they're able to provide because the funding levels aren't high enough to allow for a meaningful service.
Dr. Michael McDowell again.
My own belief is that this has to come from federal leadership. At the moment, state governments have a set of agendas that I fully don't understand, but whatever it is, we've got Labor governments in every state in Australia. But I keep in contact with all colleagues doing the same sort of work, and the trend is Australia-wide that there's a withdrawal of interest and support for these children, not a growth. The only answer I can see is at a federal level, that the federal funding that's given to schools, especially the funding that's given to private schools, comes with conditions about the level of resource and structure that they have to give these children with special needs.
But the health side of it?
At the political level, there has to be some way of saying children are important rather than education is important or health is important. So the only way I can see is to have some sort of office of children that can look at child-related issues that are intersectoral. So things that cross between family services and health services and educational services at a federal level. They need to be able to look at the questions of who does what and where are the gaps and where are the overlaps and who is the lead agency. Because at the moment, everyone just does their own little bit and there are huge gaps between the different government departments, but none of them have the responsibility for the big picture.
And the last word for the mums and dads?
Just keep fighting. And keep fighting as an individual, and if you have any energy left over, keep fighting as a collective group if you can find other like-minded people. Because at the end of the day, the politicians listen to people. The politicians are supposed to be there helping our society. And if all of your energy is consumed in just managing the child and there's not much left over to pass the message back on to the people who make the decisions, they're not going to get the message.
Nathan Cole has just spent 2 years at Glenleighden School. He spoke to the Health Report the day he'd had his first trial in his first job, putting potato wedges into plastic bags and then putting them into the freezer. He was waiting to hear if they were going to have him back.
Those potato wedges, I put some in plastic bags and sealed them, a few bags of those, and that's it, and put them in the freezer.
Did you enjoy doing that?
Yes.
Do you think you'd like to keep doing that sort of work?
Yeah. And hopefully you get to cook.
6-year-old Sam is excited about having a birthday party. He told me yesterday he was laughed at in school when he put his hand up and said Dix instead of six when answering a maths question. I asked him what he did next. He told me he just said nothing in case they all laughed again. I gave him a cuddle and we talked about the dog he wants for his birthday present.
I know. Pet dog.
A pet dog?
Yeah. I don't want him named Oscar.
Oscar?
Yeah.
Why Oscar?
Just a night Oscar, don't must. A night dos.
So what colour will the puppy dog be?
Brown and white. Brown and white.
And I certainly hope Sam got his dog. That was a Health Report special on Gap Kids, made by Heather Stewart.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast. Thank you.